it's time to head to more pleasant climes, what we often refer to as the million-dollar sandbar. He's the writer for the Miami Herald. You may have heard a certain college football coach recently left from here to there. Follow online, MiamiHerald.com, on Twitter, at David J. Neal. David, it's great to get a chance to speak with you. How are things in your world?
Oh, it's actually a little bit nippy down here today. I woke up, it was like 53, and people saw people in scarves and hats as I went across the street to get my Cuban coffee before the morning workout. And so other than that, we're getting ready to sit on the couch and watch the Patriots demolish the Dolphins, likely on Monday Night Football.
So the bottom line is, if you took our temperature last night and doubled it, we still wouldn't have gotten to 53. You know, I've got to tell you, I'm from North Jersey, but had family and friends from Lauderdale, Hollywood, South Ocean Drive, across the street from the old Diplomat. Used to read Edwin Pope. I used to go to the old Jackie Gleason Inverary Classic. I lost a bunch of cash at Hi-Li and Calder and Gulfstream. So I'm kind of curious, what's your background? Where do you hail from, and how long have you worked for the Herald?
I'm originally from Indianapolis, Indiana, so the only day I will not work is race day, and that's Indianapolis 500. That is the only race. That can be defined as race day. I've been down here since 1989, and I've worked for the Herald since then.
All right.
And I spent 25 years on South Beach, and I now live in Little Havana.
It's nice. I mentioned where I'm from. I date back actually old enough to have seen the tail end of the Mickey Mantle era. And, of course, today finalized Miami to New York, Giancarlo Stanton. I'm kind of curious as to what's the buzz, obviously, being on social media, working for the Herald. You probably hear from fans and colleagues. So what's the buzz of the trade to send in Stanton to the South Bronx?
There are angry people here. It just feels like the Marlins have gone through a few different complete teardowns and, you know, fire sales and, you know, salary dumps. So this one hurt a little more because the guy was just coming right off an MVP season. This wasn't a guy like in the Miguel Cabrera case. You knew he was going to be a great player, and he was just a good to very good player. Stanton is already what Stanton's going to be. And so there's tremendous anger over that. He was a reason to go to Marlins games. He was a reason people paid attention to the Marlins this last season. They were they were out of the playoff race pretty much from mid-season on, but he was a reason to turn on your TV when they were playing, and as something more than background noise. And there's a lot of anger that Jeter came in. It's kind of a compilation of things. Jeter and the other guy who has the real money come in, and they immediately say they're going to slash payroll. That, and you know, fans are like, oh great, meet, you know, won't get fooled again. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And then they fired the play-by-play guys. They fired all these guys who have been Marlins ambassadors, like Tony Perez, Jeff Conine, who guys known as Mr. Marlin down here, Jack McKeon. There wasn't a lot of good feeling. He hasn't engendered a lot of good feeling. And I say he, meaning Jeter, because he's the face of the ownership.
Sure.
So, you know, the trading of Stanton would have been bad enough, but coming after all this and to the Yankees, yes, we know Stanton had a no trade clause and and vetoed the Giants and Cardinals. But that's it. It's all just adding up to a lot of venom being spewed at Jeter. People understand, the baseball side of it, or the money side of it, we're trying to rebuild, blah, blah, blah. There's still great anger that the trade happened, and then he wound up going to the Yankees. Because also, what you also have down here, and I'm sure you know this, given your background, you got a bunch of angry Marlins fans, and you got a bunch of real happy Yankees fans who are really noisy about being happy about it.
So, that's awesome.
You know, there's. I'm sure there's a little bit of friendly in some cases, probably not so friendly tension in offices and stores around, or you have both. both sharing
Love
the
it.
Same workspace or living space today.
We're talking with David Neal of the Miami Herald. Obviously, major news back here in Eugene last week with the announcement, Willie Taggart heading back to Florida for a dream job, Florida State. And I know how passionate Seminole fans are. And like I mentioned, you probably hear from a lot of people. How would you describe the reaction, even after a 6-6 season, of losing Jimbo Fisher to what is clearly an inferior program at Texas A&M?
The feeling I get from Florida State fans, and I'm not as I would say plugged into Florida State fans as I was, say, maybe a few years ago when I was really living and dying with college football every single day during the season. But the feeling I'm getting is I've got a few fans that are kind of like, okay, good riddance. If you didn't want to be here and you wanted to go to Texas A&M, well, take your happy ass to College Station, as far as the Willie Taggart hiring, what's he proven? It seems like an awful fast move up the ladder. I mean, there's not a lot of respect for in most corners. I mean, there are some Florida State fans who are very happy with it. But there's not a lot of respect in most corners for what he did at Western Kentucky and what he did at South Florida. They just say, okay, wait a minute, he's had 1 year at a P5 school and he's worthy of, guiding our, sainted Seminoles. Oh, really? So, yeah, that's kind of, you have that school. But then, like I said, there are other people who are very happy with the hiring. His whole background, he's from Bradenton, Florida, and was a quarterback at Bradenton Manatee, I believe. And went to Western Kentucky as a player, and then, went back as a coach, helped turn the program around there, did the same thing at South Florida. So, you got both schools. I think a lot of the University of Miami fans are thinking, Florida's got a new coach, and Florida State's got a new coach. Suddenly, Mark Richt is like the established guy among the Big Three. So
two years, the most tenured
about
coach
and everything down here.
Yeah, that's amazing that of those three schools now, the most tenured coach is wrapping up his second season. It's amazing.
Exactly.
So as you wrote over the weekend, it's been almost 5 years to the day since now Oregon coach Mario Cristobal was fired at Florida International. And that was kind of a different circumstance. He took over a relatively new program from Don Strock, who had won no games, made some progress. What do you remember about the kind of head coach he was and the work he did with the Golden Panthers?
Mario took over a situation that was could not have been worse as far as D1 programs. They had, as you said, they had gone 0-12 with Don Strock. They had committed a number of NCAA violations, I believe, during that season. And the extent even of the NCAA sanctions to come down were sort of, from what I heard, withheld from Mario until after he got hired. And then he chose to stick it out and deal with it. Mario is, FIU is in the kind of west, southwest part of town. It's very close to the area where he grew up, where he went to high school. It's right in his wheelhouse. He's very much a 305 guy. But he took over the program, and he really did build it up. He did an excellent job of recruiting. I was kind of going through his 2011 team that went 8-4 in the regular season, lost a bowl game to Marshall. And that team had, on offense, you had T.Y. Hilton, who's, you know, tearing it up with the Indianapolis Colts right now. He was the main centerpiece, the dynamic guy. They had Wesley Carroll, who had started games at Mississippi State before transferring, and for a pretty good Mississippi State team, they went to a bowl. They had Willis Wright and Glenn Coleman, two guys you will never hear of, but Willis Wright was a four-star recruit, and all you had to do was look at him on the football field, and you realize why he was a four-star recruit, and that he could be at any P5 school, and you would think, okay, he's going to be in the NFL in a few years. And they had another guy named Glenn Coleman, who was just as talented as Willis Wright. So, yeah, they had two very athletic tight ends, like one a former soccer player and one the best one-on-one basketball player on the team. So you had this all this talent, which he did a great job of getting there. I'd say the minus to him as a coach, kind of in-game coaching, that sometimes he had a tendency to get very, you know, the sphincter could get pretty tight pretty quick. And you know, he got too conservative, I think, in a lot of cases, instead of really keeping your foot on the gas. That cost them in his last season when they went 3-9, which was a season that where kind of everything went wrong. The guys got injured at the wrong time. The quarterback gets injured, and you have to wind up starting a true freshman against, like, three or four bowl teams and an 8-win team that got screwed out of a bowl. They had the kicker who never missed an extra point, missed extra points at key points in games, and that cost them. The long snapper who never blew a long snap handed two touchdowns and a safety to opponents during the season with bad snap. It was that kind of year. It opened the door for Pete Garcia, with whom Mario clashed at FIU. He was the athletic director, and still is the athletic director. It opened the door for Pete Garcia to fire Mario, and that's, you know, that's kind of why he got fired. He did a very good job, though, turning that program around, getting into two bowl games. Yeah, he had the great player, the great individual player in T.Y. Hilton, but T.Y. was a wide receiver. It's not like, you know, a Herschel Walker or a Cam Newton touching the ball on every play.
Sure. Yeah, I went back and read some of the articles about the time he was dismissed, and you mentioned Pete Garcia, and of course Cristobal, like you said, inherited a rough situation. So was that kind of the consensus, that maybe it was a knee-jerk reaction and maybe Garcia was not justified in firing him at that juncture?
The general reaction, locally and nationally, was what the heck are they doing? The guy had one bad year after, you know, slowly it had been continual progress from the previous several years. And but also Garcia tried to paint it as being about the on-field results, but the fact that they wound up with Ron Turner as their next coach, you know, kind of tells you it wasn't. This is about a clash between he and Mario, and he got to pull the trigger first. Mario Cristobal made some errors in recruiting. He was a very good recruiter. He made some small errors in recruiting and made more errors in in-game coaching and maybe in handling players. I think with the errors that he made, he will have learned from, and also, he's a smart guy. He just spent 4 years with Nick Saban. Nick Saban, for whatever you want to say about him, is an incredibly good football coach and a very smart man, and Mario is smart enough to have learned from Nick Saban for 4 years, and I think he's also smart enough to have learned from his mistakes at FIU. If he didn't, well, you'll find out soon enough.
Yeah, a final thought for David Neal of the Miami Herald, who writes more than sports. I love the Twitter feed, some great political and social commentary. And I also saw you retweeted our buddy Lee Sterling of Paramount Sports, who we have on every Friday.
But we called it David and Goliath a couple of years ago, where he and I competed in picks. And I actually wound up edging him over the course of a season. Total upset, if appropriate, because it was David and Goliath, of course. But
I am totally going to bring that up to him next time I talk. All right. Well, one thing, the Southern Florida sports fan, because I spent some time there. You know, you got the Heat, the Dolphins, the Marlins, the Canes, college. Do they have an obvious top passion, or is that kind of like the L.A. fan? They got so much going on, the weather, that if you're not winning, you'll lose their attention.
Well, I think, okay, let's clear up one fallacy. I always hate that. Oh, whenever somebody says, oh, there's so much to do in a city. As if everybody who's not at a game is either at the beach or on the golf course. No, they're doing what everybody else is doing. You know, you're going to Home Depot. You're going to your kids', you know, swim meets. You're running errands, or you're sitting around your house chilling after, you know, a week of work. But the South Florida sports fan, I mean, it's interesting, generationally, if you're talking, like, I'm 50 years old, people my age and a little younger, maybe about 40, tend to be, you know, Dolphins tend to be their number one thing. If you're talking 30 and under, definitely the Heat are the number one team. Because, I mean, the Dolphins haven't been in an AFC championship game in 25 years. You know, so they don't remember the Dolphins as a legitimate Super Bowl threat, while they've seen the Heat repeatedly go deep in the playoffs, win championships, be dynamic, have, you know, these stars, and also have this great fun in-game experience that feels very Miami and very big eventy.
Right.
That's kind of how, I mean, this. You know, the sport, the kids who grow up here now, I think the kids who grew up in the last 20 years, because you've had, in addition to the Dolphins and the University of Miami Hurricanes playing locally, where once those are the only kind of two things, the kids who've grown up in the last 20 years, they've grown up with the Heat, they've grown up with the Marlins, they've grown up with the Panthers. Okay, they've grown up with the Marlins being usually kind of crappy, except for a couple, 2 years when they won the World Series, and they've grown up with the Panthers being perpetually disappointing, but those teams are there. So pretty much it's whoever can put together a consistent few years picks up, I think we'll picks up the momentum of the fans and kind of grabs the attention of the locals. Now, granted, if the Dolphins ever got good again the way they were in the 70s and the times during the 80s, they'd probably be the number one team. And there's the Hurricanes, they have a following, strong following also. But they also, interestingly, there's people at FIU, where Mario Cristobal used to coach, who, while there are many FIU graduates who follow UM because UM was their football team before FIU got a football team, there are those FIU graduates, and there's a lot of them because that's like the fourth largest university in the country, who are like, no, they're very anti-UM. So, you know, it's generally whoever can put together a run of success and also kind of, you know, create a sort of atmosphere at their games. That's who grabs the attention of the moment. And, you know, for now, it's kind of the Heat. This season, the turnover chain and everything, the University of Miami was kind of riding high. So it's much more fluid than it was for years when it was Dolphins number one, everybody else fighting for second.
All right, that is some terrific insight and information. I wish you have an enjoyable, warm winter, and good luck if you're playing any games or at High Lie or something like that. You can keep up with him on the Miami Herald site on Twitter. The handle is at David J. Neal. Hey, great stuff, David. Thanks for carving out some time for us. I really appreciate it. And I hope you
Thanks
and your family have a terrific holiday.
You too. Happy Hanukkah.
All right, take it easy.